Let's face it, size matters.
Truly epic proportions.
Especially when it comes to your financial talk.
I have a plan.
Quick sound bites and rush chatter won't help you.
Blah, 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 blah.
You want more details, more depth.
Concentrate. Focus power.
More to think about.
What do you think?
This is Money Life's Big Interview.
I think it's brilliant.
A meaningful conversation on money and markets.
This is why we're here.
So settle in.
I made you coffee.
You're going to be here a while.
Well, we not only think it's perfect when we have a regular big interview, but today we're able to extend our time a little bit. And that's important because what we also have is a very big name in the investment world, because my guest is Jim O'Shaughnessy. He is Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of O'Shaughnessy Asset Management, which, by the way, is OSAM.com if you want the website. He is perhaps better known as the author of the best-selling book, What Works on Wall Street. And what's great about Jim is that when you hear him talk today, if you haven't read the book, you'll get a sense of what he thinks works on Wall Street. But if you have read the book, you'll understand that this is a guy who walks his own talk. He eats his own cooking, does it exactly the way he said it. And, you know, half the time when we talk about folks who have written books, it's kind of like, let me tell you how this works. And you go, well, if this was so great, you wouldn't be giving it to me for free. That's not, you know, or giving it to me on the cheap for the book. That's not what it's about here. What it's about here is, yeah, this is a great way to make it work. And oh, by the way, if you don't want to do it yourself, then you can hire O'Shaughnessy Asset Management. By the way, his son Patrick had the book Millennial Money. We were talking about that on the show as well. And it's interesting. Charles Roquebrune at AAII would tell you there's sort of the O'Shaughnessy strategy screens that AAII uses. And now they have the millennial screens based on Patrick's book. But right now we are very lucky to have Jim on the show. Jim O'Shaughnessy, welcome back to Money Life.
Well, thanks, Chuck. Love to be here.
You know, I have you on at this time, and you were here about a year ago. I have you on at this time when we start to take a look at the year ahead. And I have to say, in terms of my thinking as I set up an interview, this is probably one of the dumbest things I do. It has nothing to do with you and what you're about to say. It's about the fact that I believe that pretty much I could have you on every single December and say, hey, Jim, what do you think for the year ahead? And on the one hand, we would talk about different current events, but the entire segment about what investors should do is pretty much going to be the same every single year. Like, I could probably replay this interview next year and it'd be pretty damn close. Am I wrong about that? I mean,
Nope, you are absolutely right. We think that one of the best things that investors can do is to be persistent with their investments, to ignore the news of the day and be long-term investors, continually rebalancing their portfolios to their target mix. Great investing tends to be very simple. However, our emotions absolutely get in the way when we're trying to make decisions. I mean, witness the 2008-2009 bear market. We had people telling us they really didn't care what our outlook was for the coming 5 years. We threw all sorts of data at them. We showed them the 50 worst 10-year periods and what happened afterwards. And by the way, in the 50 worst periods since 1871, when you ignore the 1 year after the bottom of the bear, the 3, 5, 7, and 10-year columns were all positive, not one negative. And, you know, it gets frustrating for us because we really want people to make the right choice. But what we found is that in, sort of the four horsemen of the investment apocalypse are fear, greed, hope, and ignorance.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at it, only ignorance is not an emotion. I think that fear, greed, and hope have wiped out more portfolio value than any bear market in history.
And at the same time, as much as we could say, hey, set it, rebalance it, because it's not set it and forget it. Set it, rebalance it, monitor it, and go forward regardless of all conditions. You know, that would argue, Jim, that I should buy, if I were looking at your funds, the O'Shaughnessy All Cap Core Fund.
Yes.
I should have that fund because that says, look at everything, come up with an overall strategy. Here it is for the market. I don't really need to rebalance. You'd be doing it for me. And oh, by the way, I could then ignore O'Shaughnessy All Cap Value, O'Shaughnessy Enhanced Dividend, O'Shaughnessy International, O'Shaughnessy Market Leaders, and Small Cap Growth and Small Cap Value. You know, you do have a couple of funds here that their mere existence might be somewhat anachronistic given the that whole thing. So is it a case of, hey, you really do at some point want to drill down and go, let's get a small cap, let's get a whatever, or can we, or have we just sort of made this unnecessarily hard on people? But oh, by the way, since you're in the fund business, you have to serve what people want.
Exactly. And that's the important point. You know, different people of different ages, right? They're going to have very, very different horizons. So, you know, if you're a millennial and you're in your 20s, you might want to be a lot more aggressive than somebody who's my age, 54, right? So that's why we have the various funds, so that people or advisors working with their clients can build their own asset allocation. We think that basically, you know, right now is a great time to be young. You mentioned my son's book, Millennial Money. Right now, what those guys have on their side is time. And so, you know, yesterday I just took a look at all rolling periods for the S&P 500, right? I wanted to see if you had a 30-year holding period, which many millennials could have, what would be the best worst-case scenario? So the best-case scenario turned out to be $10,000 turning into $284,043. The worst case saw that $10,000 grow to $33,500. The average was $87,300, and the median was $80,500. The point is, none of those are negative numbers. And if we can really align our objectives with our timeline, that's a really powerful thing to do. You know, if you're a young person right now and you're not going to retire for the next 30 years, that should be your time horizon. It shouldn't be this quarter or today or this week. And yet that's the thing that we get really, really a lot of pushback on. Because again, getting back to emotions, we are emotional creatures. And our entire design was really perfected for living in the savannas of Africa, right? Mm-hmm. If you saw the bush moving, it's our ancestors who were the ones that ran away, right? So it's the people who said, huh, I wonder if that's just the wind or if it's a tiger. Well, they got eaten by the tiger and their genes aren't in our gene pool. So it's very, very difficult for your average investor to fight the emotional aspect of investing. So one of the things that I recommend is that I recommend either, if you don't work with an advisor and you and want to do this, do it with a friend. And it is a letter. And the letter is very simple. It says, at some point I know that I will come to you and want to sell out of X, you know, small cap value, large cap growth, whatever. And I recognize that I'm probably doing that because it's been doing horribly recently and I'm terrified. Please stop me from doing that. Please remind me that I need to rebalance my portfolio back to its target. Real simple stuff, but you've got to come up with a lot of ways to basically disconnect the emotion from the investing. And that is a real challenge.
You know, well, first things, I've got to go back and correct you on something.
Sure.
And it's not really entirely a correction. It's just, of course, as we said, you constantly look at things and sort of have the same approach in all market conditions. If that is the case, I would just like to point out that you said today is a particularly good time to be young. I'd like to say all times are a good time to be young. I'm not suggesting that youth isn't wasted on the young, but I am suggesting it's always a good time to be young, isn't it? And I just keep hoping as I age that we'll redefine what young is.
Oh, so do I.
So that I can stay there, right? That's what I want.
I think that that is an excellent correction. You're right. It is always, always a great time to be young.
But it's also always a good time. I mean, I think that's actually where it's going. It's always a good time to think that you're young because, again, although you need to perhaps make your portfolio more conservative and change your asset allocations over time to make them appropriate with your age, you need to also remember that you're retiring, you're not dying.
Right, right, exactly. And you're going to be living through that retirement, and you've got to have a portfolio that's going to be able to support you through that entire that retirement. And I think, you know, everyone is different, right? So I personally, I'm 54 years old, but I have an infinite time horizon because I have done well enough so that I'm now thinking about my children and my grandchildren and my great-grandchildren. I have a grandson, which is a lovely thing, Pierce O'Shaughnessy, who's nearly a year old. And I think that people, you know, people's circumstances are all completely different. There are other people who are my age that are going to absolutely have to live on their investments during retirement. And so they're going to have a very different allocation than I have. And I think that that's often missed, right, in when we talk about the right, in quotes, allocation for an investor. Well, every 54-year-old investor is really different. Some are going to need to be very conservative and get portfolios that provide enough income for them to live on when they retire in 10 or 15 years. Others are going to be able to be much more aggressive because that isn't the case. So I always kind of cringe a little when I see people talking about, well, let's do the classic 60-40 allocation and or, you know, bonds should equal your weighting in bonds should equal your age. I think that those are really sort of generic and really not even good recommendations. So, for example, bonds, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have lived through the biggest bond market rally in history. Most people don't consider the fact that when you look at bonds in the fullness of time, that basically they can have massive drawdowns on an inflation-adjusted basis. You know, long treasuries have lost more than half their value between 1926 and now. And so I think that the generic recommendations should really, really be looked at closely because, for the most part, people lack the sense of history. They don't really know what can happen to an investment. You know, treasury bills return nothing after inflation. So people keeping their money in cash, that's possibly, in the short term, makes them feel great, right? If we have a 2008 and they go, oh, wow, I didn't lose any money. Well, you did. If you started investing in treasuries in 2007, right now you have an inflation-adjusted loss. You have lost money. So what investments look really safe over the short term tend to look really dangerous over the long term.
You know, I said that we had an extended time today, and we've used the vast majority of it talking about the things that are important, but I also said we'd give a bit of an outlook. So I would be remiss if I didn't try to take the time remaining, knowing full well that I couldn't use money or a cattle prod to get you to make market prognostications. but
you know me well, Chuck.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, I know that as much as you don't make those things and you don't tell people to react to them, there are things that you're watching and there are things that make you nervous that this is the things that's going to make those people come in and go, hey, I'm scared. I need to trade. So.
Sure.
So instead of looking out going, hey, what do you think, you know, great things are going to happen, et cetera, what is it that worries you as we head into 2015 that these are going to be the things that are going to be people's touch points?
I think a couple of things. I think that right now there's this, as my son calls it, portfolio patriotism, where we're, as Americans, we have the majority of our money in American stocks. We think right now that just on a valuation basis, American investors should take a look overseas and into emerging markets. Now, emerging markets can be very volatile, but right now they're pretty cheap. We like cheap. Similarly, we have emerged markets in Europe, and people are terrified to go there because of the potential debt crisis. I would only remind them that we really do live in a global economy. You take BP, for example. BP gets more of its revenue from outside of Europe than it does from in. And that is the case with both American companies, but also with companies headquartered in Europe. And when you look at the valuation metrics, you're getting a much bigger bargain from Europe than you are currently getting in the United States. So I'm not saying sell the United States. I'm saying diversify into a more global portfolio where you can pick up things that are very, very cheap, and that it would be a good thing to do in terms of your overall portfolio.
Yeah. So in other words, do that rebalancing thing, buy the stuff that's a little bit out of favor, recognizing that at some point the market will pay you off on that, and that when that happens, you'll be glad that you did. That's really what we're saying.
That's exactly what we're saying, John.
Well, I wish we had more time to say more things, but unfortunately, we have come to the end of our time. But I'll tell you what, like I said, Jim, because I know I could pretty much air this interview again next year and have it be the same thing, that doesn't mean I'm going to do that. You and I will have to talk again at some point in 2015, once or twice, just to check in and make sure that somebody didn't hit you with the cattle prod and make you change those basic things.
Would love to, Chuck.
Thanks so much. Jim O'Shaughnessy is the Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of O'Shaughnessy Asset Management. If you want to learn about the firm and its funds, it is osam.com for O'Shaughnessy Asset Management. And remember, if you're looking for the book, well, it's What Works on Wall Street and is still one of the best sellers out there. All right, we have come mostly to the close of today's edition of Money Life, but we got just a little bit more to go. Let's cross the finish line together, and we will do that right after this message. We're living the money life, and we'll get back to it in just a moment.